This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 104. And I'm here with my colleagues, Alex, who you can find at Alex DeGroote at DeGroote Media on Twitter. And you've got Mr. Smart, Suited, Booted, and even Coiffured, Henry Viola Hare. You can find it at HT Viola on Twitter. This is a new format with us three at the moment. And just want to thank everybody that listened to podcast 103. I feel like I need to apologize for the rant that started, but I'm not going to apologize for it. And it went down quite well. I'll talk about one of the feedbacks we've got amongst several that we got regarding the last podcast, including one from Australia. But I think we need to just get straight into this because we did spend a bit of time last week talking about other things non-investing wise. But thank you all for your support and your feedback for 103. The markets are all over the place at the moment, guys. And I'm not quite sure if anyone knows what to do with it all. You know, some people are rushing back in the market. Some people are saying, I'm not going anywhere. And we've been bubbling about, you know, at the risk of giving up 7,400 and FTSE 100. Today, we've done reasonably well, just on the cusp, finished at 7,500. But the AIM, the small cap space, is still drifting down. We closed at, where did we finish on the FTSE AIM All Share? 756.6. Not looking good for the tiny little tiddlers in the market. They need some love from there. They need the larger entities of the AIM share, the 50 index and the AIM 100 index, to pull the whole of the AIM All Share up. But where do you want to start, Alex? Henry, what's going on with the market? Because personally, I'm sitting here going...
Yeah, I mean, my sense, chaps, is that the UK is becoming a bit of a special situation. And this is a narrative which has been playing out. But on the back of the most recent rate rise, taking us up to 5% for the base rate, I increasingly feel that the UK is sort of in special measures. And your point there, Pete, about the markets... FTSE 100 pretty good, FTSE 250 under pressure, AIM under pressure. So what does that tell us? That tells us really that at the big end of the market, big market caps, big liquidity, there's still a fair amount of volume and a fair amount of interest, lots of overseas earners. And those trends, I think, will remain okay. But there's probably a sense amongst smaller mid caps that liquidity is light, that the UK consumer might be under some pressure on the back of this negative data to do with inflation and interest rates. The flip side is that, you know, we see ongoing bid activity and ongoing M&A activity in smaller mid caps, particularly from corporates, if not from private equity. So I guess for me, the vibe which is coming across from the market is smaller mid caps remains on naughty steps. And investors are sort of favouring UK large caps, or quite frankly, they're looking outside of the UK.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Thank you for that, Alex. I agree with you completely. Henry, what would you add regarding what you've seen, nuances you've seen in the market so far?
Well, my portfolio has been taking a bit of a kicking this year. I am just about to do my half-year write-up, actually, on the blog. And one pattern that has emerged is sort of a three-month cycle. So I'm finding, certainly in the first half of this year, I've got 1 month where I have an absolute car crash month, you know, down sort of 5%, followed by a very minor rally of a percent or two, then a bit of a pullback, and then another car crash month. So we seem to be in this cycle where I think investors are nervous. You know, the Bank of England doesn't seem to have a grip on inflation. The government doesn't seem to have much of a plan. Prices are sticky. They're increasing too fast. Consumers aren't slowing down their spending. And there's a lot of cost pressure in the economy. There's a lot of demand in the economy. And this is meaning that the market is very, very volatile. Certainly, one of the shares I own, DGI9 Infrastructure Trust, has had huge volatility in the last quarter. Mm-hmm. We've had swings within a day of sort of 8-9% either way. And the net result of that has been that it's sort of come off a cliff and then started treading water. But it's hugely, hugely volatile, far more so than I would expect an investment trust to normally be. And I think that's a result of the market trying to figure out, one, where inflation is going to stop, but also what the bank is going to do with interest rates.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's linked to interest rates and the uncertainty of when is it going to peak? And then the question of what once it's peaked is when will it start to come off, including inflation regarding that aspect of it. I think the other thing that other people haven't maybe not seen or even looked at is the Siemens energy issue that's been going around. I'm not sure everyone's seen any of this, but there's concerns around Siemens Energy and the building of the wind turbines. There's questions about the quality of some wind turbines. And I think that's an underlying thing, which we, on this side of Europe, you know, we are still in Europe in a sense of being a larger part of the map, have not been talking about. And I'm not sure if that's something else underlying, as well as the interest rates and the inflation and the debt aspect of all the rest of it, but also about the contracts regarding storage, you know, storage of information, storage of energy. Everyone's thinking about what's going on with everything else. My real concern now regarding all of the interest rates issues is the fact that they've tied this in with, we're going to peak at this rate and we're going to get it back down inflation down to 2%. I just don't see it happening. I said this last time, I just don't see them all of a sudden being able to go all the way up with interest rates and then pull, you know, put us into recession almost, and then pull inflation down to 2% within 6 months. So I think we're going to just be sticking up there. And if we're lucky next year, and I want Alex to give me a completely different opinion on this. Next year, we're sitting there at probably 4% or 5%, 4.5% interest rates. And equally, we'll still be sitting here regarding inflation at a similar sort of level. I don't see having 2% at all regarding inflation. I just think it's a pipe dream.
Well, the mandate for the Bank of England is 2%, isn't it, guys? That's what Bailey has, in theory, got to manage towards, is 2%. But it feels very far away from where we are at the moment. Tracking north of 8%, 2% feels like a wishful, wishful thinking. Just before coming on air, we were having a chat about the Thames Water situation. Yes. and about debt. And about leverage, and about, you know, maybe investors need to screen their holdings for debt relative to profits or EBITDA or cash flow, because it feels to me as though companies that have too much debt are they're already being punished, but they could get punished more the longer this goes on for. And so just to give people a rule of thumb, in the sort of institutional world, we would look at a ratio called net debt to EBITDA, which is basically debt divided by profits. And for most companies, if that figure was above 2.5 times, it could give you some cause for concern. 2.5 times would be a sort of ratio. And just to put that back in the context of Thames Water, which is not a public company and which is a utility, so it is different to a normal trading company, their leverage ratio is 12.5 times net debt to EBITDA. So it's about the highest debt ratio I've ever seen. Having said that, you know, it is a utility, so theoretically can support high debt, but not that high. And so clearly, as we talk tonight for the recording, the issue is, you know, what's going to happen to Thames Water? Is it going to go bust? And then if you're an investor listening to us, you know, what companies should I be worried about? And Henry, I think, was going to have a quick word on Severn Trent, for example, because I do think this screening exercise for debt is something that listeners should be aware of, because it's becoming front of mind.
Absolutely.
I agree. But before you go on to that, Henry, because this week alone, and we saw it coming a year and a half ago, even a bit longer than that, pre-lockdown, and every company that loads itself up with debt ends up being perilous, right? And I think it was this week or a couple of days back, Cineworld, has it finally gone yet?
Yeah, what did they do?
Make a massive buy in America, piled on all the debt, Bosch, hammered. ASOS took on loads of debt, made an acquisition, Bosch, hammered. Every time they pile on and pile on and pile on debt, it just becomes arduous to actually move. You're running to stand still. You know, so as I said before on this podcast over and over again, just be mindful of companies with loads of debt, you know, because in this recessionary environment, you've got to have the cash flow, you've got to have the revenues coming in to service the debt. And if you can't service the debt, you're going to get absolutely hammered. And you're fundraising at a lower and lower and lower price and diluting everybody off. Sorry, Henry, go on.
No. That is all very true. I mean, for me, I've inherited a holding in Severn Trent, which is a listed water company. And much like Thames Water, they've got an enormous debt pile. And so for me, the first thing I've started to do is to really dive into what that debt pile looks like, because it can be variable rate or fixed rate. Variable rate means that it will follow the base rate. So as the base rate goes up, their cost of servicing the debt will increase, whereas fixed rate is fixed for a period of time. And you've also got to consider the maturity of the debt that they've got. So for me, you know, it's not so much the overall figure that's of concern. It's more how much of it are they going to have to pay back and how quickly, because that multiple is really quite concerning for some companies. I mean, you can have firms that have got 5 or 6 times their annual profit that they've got to pay back in the next 2 years. And you think, well, where are they going to get the money from to do this? Their net debt, they've not got enough cash on the books, and they're not generating enough profit. And what will happen in that instance is that the company will have to go to the market and try to refinance. They'll have to take out a new bond. Now, in that instance, one of two things happens. Either the market says, yes, we're quite happy to lend you another 100 million, but we're going to charge you 3 times as much interest. Or they say, no, actually, we're not willing to refinance this at all. The original lenders want their money back and there's no cash available to repay them. And in that instance, the company goes under or has to sell off huge amounts of assets. It can be a huge risk. And so for me, this Thames Water event has really made me start to dive into my portfolio, go into the annual reports for the companies and look at both the cash flow profiles and the maturity profiles of the debt and try to calculate when debt needs to be repaid and if I can see any liquidity events coming up in my portfolio.
I think that's a very, very good idea. I mean, I was looking at, just got some numbers up in front of me here, and it's saying that Thames Water's debt's 16.5 billion. Severn Trent is edging towards, if not more so, around 7 billion. And United Utilities is 8.5 billion, 9 billion. You know, these numbers are going to be accelerating. Every single day they're not paying the debt off, it's going higher. You know, when they do get some money in, it'll go lower. So, yeah, it's a lot of debt sitting in the water firms at the moment. But like you say, screening your companies for how much debt they've got and what their cover is regarding paying that back, regarding income and revenue, is going to be vitally important if we do have a really sticky period of recession. And also the fact that some of these companies will have to sacrifice. This is the bit that no one wants to talk about. You know, Severn Trent is there and a lot of pension funds and companies are invested in it for the income, right? If you've got such debt, when people go, actually, mate, right now, you're going to have to stop paying those dividends. As an income provider, what happens when you announce that you stop paying your dividends as a large 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%, 9% dividend payer? Your share price is going to go, because all those income seekers are going to just run to the next company that's paying them a dividend. So you get the double whammy of A, we've got to raise money, and B, we're raising money and we can't afford to pay a dividend share out this year or this half or for the next 2 years. And all of a sudden, all those long-term investors are going, okay, I'm going to have to move now and go and buy another company. So you could end up getting dilution and movement of shareholders because they're no longer going to stick around because you're not paying them a dividend.
I think that point piece is brilliant about the dividend, because for a start, the benchmark has increased because of the rise in interest rates. So what we consider an acceptable yield has changed. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, a dividend yield of 2 or 3% wasn't too shabby. Now, frankly, you know, the risk-free rate's 4.5, interest rates are 5. You know, shareholders need higher dividend yield to compensate for the risk of owning the shares. The second thing is, if a company's going to have to pay more interest or refinance its debt on worse terms, because that's the market environment, tends to mean that things like dividends and capital expenditure may come under pressure because the company needs to prioritize its debt. So it can be the law of unintended consequences, this sort of marketplace where companies have to sort of react to the change in cost of financing. And that can have an impact on growth capex or frankly, shareholder dividends. So I think investors need to be aware of what they've got their money in because things can move quite quickly. I've got a sense at the moment, I don't know if you guys agree, but I've got a sense that things are slightly out of control. And I think that the last couple of inflation prints we've had have been worse than expected. If we'd done this pod 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, I actually had a sense that things weren't sort of broadly under control. But I must be honest, very recent events have sort of slightly spooked me. That's from a UK perspective, not necessarily globally. That's us here in the UK.
Well, that's an interesting point because that brings me on to foreign markets quite nicely. So listeners might have heard that the US is doing very, very well. You know, their market is up something bonkers, 30% year to date. But one that they might not have heard of is Japan and the Nikkei 225, which has recently hit, I think, a 30-year high. It's actually been one of the best performing markets in 2023, which is quite astounding considering that when most people think of Japan, they think of a really stagnant stock market that's gone nowhere. You know, it's a market that is really transforming itself. And I think companies over there they're really working hard to help themselves grow and unlock value because there is an awful lot of value over there. A lot of the older firms are very cash rich and they've got a new generation stepping forward that are looking how to deploy that cash to grow after, you know, really decades of stagnation. And the Nikkei has grown in sterling terms at about 12% this year. So if you'd put your portfolio in that, you would have, you know, you'd have had about a 12% return. But what people might not realize is that that 12% return would have been blown out of the water if you'd owned it in yen. And in yen, the index has gone up nearly 30%, I think, 35%, something like that. So nearly three times.
Some figures here, Henry, you're not far off. 1 month up 7.4, 3 month 19%, year to date 27.2, and over the last 1 year, 12 months, 23.84.
It's absolutely astonishing. But it did, listening to those figures, it did make me start to think about currency risk. Because when I started investing, I initially only really traded in UK shares. So I had no currency risk. Everything was denominated in pounds. I bought in pounds, I sold in pounds, and dividends were paid in pounds. But as my portfolio grew, I started to get exposure to foreign currencies, particularly the dollar, the yen, and the euro. And so investors might want to look at the holdings that they've got, particularly funds and ETFs, because you can get hedging options for currencies. So you can buy funds that will automatically hedge against currency movements. It will say so in the name, they'll be called hedged. But it is very, very worth, if you've got ETFs, just having a look at what you own, checking what it's denominated in, because that can have a big impact on your returns over time.
Good call. One of the things, I think I mentioned it on the podcast before, that I don't know how many years ago, you know, when the penny drops and you go, oh, how stupid have I been historically? Why haven't I done this before? Was basically, if you've then, because you get hammered on these platforms, right? Some of them are good, some of them are bad, but mostly when it comes to FX and oh, I'm going to change some sterling into some Australian dollars or some US dollars or some yen or, you know, euro, you get hammered. You get hammered, full stop. Is that once you've done that transaction and you've gone, okay, I'm going to buy some US stocks, your sterling in your account gets changed into dollars and you make the purchase, right? And backwards, you sell it in dollars and it comes back in sterling. If you're planning to maintain some exposure to the US or euro or whatever, once you've bought it once and made that expensive transaction to change currency, leave it in the currency you've then sold it in. Because at some point or other, that small percentage that you've got in your portfolio in US dollars or in the euro, you're probably going to go back and buy another euro-denominated entity or another US dollar entity. You don't have to go through that expensive transaction again. Just pay the platform fee for the transaction, but not the FX punch that you're going to have to take each time. Because you get done twice. You bought it, you get hammered. You sold it, you get hammered. And then you're going back to buy another stock in that currency, you get hammered again. Just leave it in that currency. If you can afford to leave it in that currency, leave it in that currency.
Mm-hmm. It's a very sensible idea. And I think one of the other thoughts is gradually buying foreign currency in your account. So you can convert, you know, let's say you are buying a position at £10,000, you could drip feed in £2,000 a month for 5 months and build up the exposure gradually. And that would average out your cost base for the currency exposure. And so if you did that over, say, 10, 15 years, actually you'd have a decent sized pot in a foreign currency.
I didn't think of that one, Henry. You go to the top of the class, my friend. I didn't think of that one. I like that one. I do like that one. That's very cunning, that one. What do you want to add to that, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, the point about Japan is a point very well made. You know, when I started in the city back in the day, you know, Japanese banks and Japanese stocks were you know, they were it, basically. This is like mid-90s, late 90s. And of course, it's the world's second biggest economy. It's very export-led. We're very familiar with the consumer electronics. It's a very sophisticated economy. But the perception of Japan, I think, changed in that first decade of the 2000s. And it did become sort of tarred with this brush of stagflation, which, funnily enough, is the brush that we are now tarring the UK with, stagflation. But everything changes. Everything is dynamic. And I do sense, listening to some of the shrewdies on Twitter and on the social media channels and reading some people I really respect, that Japan's sort of time in the sun has come back again. And don't forget, from an institutional point of view, it accounts for about 5 or 6% of the MSCI World Index. So I'm sure a lot of the guys on the call will know that the global benchmark is generally the MSCI World. The US is about 70% of that. The second biggest is Japan. I mean, it used to be about 10, but now, as I say, it's back to about 6. The UK, I think, is about 3 or 4. But slightly declining. So if you're a global investor, Japan is a pretty significant market. And if you've ignored it for a while, then you're probably beginning to do work on it again, because you're beginning to think, what's going on here? Is there some growth? Maybe on a relative basis, the market looks more attractive than some of the Western European markets, which I've been favouring. So as somebody with a natural tech bias, I'm always going to like Japan because of, you know, the household names that we know and the innovation there. So I endorse what Henry's saying about Japan. I'm not clever enough or close enough to the market to recommend individual names, so it would probably have to be done through...
Pick me.
I defer to Henry.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Absolutely. So some of the household names that most people know of are, for instance, I'll just give a handful here. Toyota Motors, yeah. Sony, of course. Nippon Telegraph and Telephone Company. SoftBank, which has been up and down and all over the place. Mitsubishi, that people will know of. Which else have we got that people know? Hitachi, of course, people know. Mitsui, people know, if I pronounce that correctly. Takeda. I think they took out one of the I think they took out one of my biotech companies a while back. But looking at some of the performances here over the course of the year, you've got Toyota up 8%, Sony up 14%, Nippon up 12% year to date. Oh, sorry, 12 months, sorry. All of them are 12 months. SoftBank up 24%, despite throwing away loads of money. Mitsubishi's up 39%. Crikey, it's just some amazing movements for some mega caps on that particular front.
You don't normally get such big moves in such big names, do you? That's unusual.
Absolutely. Honda up 31% as a motor company. And obviously they've got fingers in a few other pies. But yeah, absolutely phenomenal. And our tobacco companies aren't doing so well, but theirs, Japan Tobacco, is up 37%. Our tobacco companies give me that. Oh. And they used to be safe, stodgy, not go anywhere, just pay a dividend.
Yeah.
Doing so well this year.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Where do you guys want to go next? Because I've got some stuff to cover, if you're not ready yet.
Can I just chip in with an observation on a company that I think you and I both like?
That's not a profit warning, Alex.
Well, this is to really tell people, no profit warning yet. Our mutual friends One Disco, which will shortly be renamed, they are going to attempt next week to produce a set of report and accounts for 2022. That would be a result.
Mm-hmm.
And B, heroically, they're going to be looking to raise 30 million US to recapitalize the business. So it's been suspended from AIM for a number of months, had a lot of issues. The CEO, Dave Richards, had to stand down. The CFO stood down. Even now there's an FCA investigation still ongoing. But I think a lot of us hope, perhaps with fingers crossed, that there's still a business in One Disco and there's still an equity story. But the key thing is that when the shares got delisted, it had a cap, market cap of about $1 billion. When it relists, it's not going to have a market cap of anything like $1 billion. I think they'd be lucky if it's 100 mil or maybe even 50 mil. But the key thing is, if it comes back, what valuation does it come back at? And are they successful in raising some equity capital for working capital? So I won't sort of go on about a company which is currently delisted, but this has been quite an iconic name for UK tech investors, been around a decade. A lot of us have played around in it or worked with them. It's based in Sheffield. So, you know, that's not a million miles away from me. And I want them to succeed, but I think the next week will be absolutely crucial. And I do feel for any shareholders, frankly, that have had their fingers burnt on this one, because, you know, this was effectively a fraud. And when that happens to you, you feel totally legged over. But possibly, we're at the beginning of a new story. And I certainly rate the new CEO, Stephen Kelly, who I think you know as well, Peter,
I know Stephen very well. He's got a fantastic pedigree, having been at Micro Focus and Sage and elsewhere before that in Silicon Valley and around the world. He's an absolute phenomenon when it comes to tech. And he's very, very brave to have gone in there, because, you know, the reputational damage from this could be immense. But he wants to safeguard the company, because it is one of our few, or was one of our few gems that we had. You know, it was an acorn company doing supposedly good revenue, and he's been charmed, he's been gone in there and he's doing it, and he's taken on the permanent role now, as you say, Alex. So he'll raise some money. Like you say, it was just sub £1 billion market cap. What will come? It was at 13.5 quid or there or thereabouts when it got suspended. When it comes back from suspension, if and when it comes back from suspension, the market cap is going to be nowhere near that. Raising 30 million to keep the lights on so we can safeguard it to just get some revenues in is going to be a big task. So 30 million against a market cap of previously near to $1 billion, it's small change. I saw the RNS, I think it was yesterday or the day before. It must be day before, because I was away yesterday all day. And I thought, oh, they've got a contract. And then I read it, and I'm looking down, I'm thinking, what's the value of it? I think it was like $113,000 or something. I was like, well, that's not going to do nothing. It's like, I went, yay, they've got a contract. And then it was like, oh, it's one of them. You know, it was just so small. And I really, really want this to work, not just for the UK tech economy and for Stephen Kelly, but for the fact that we need to have that the tech ecosystem in the UK needs to flourish, because we're not going to get ARM back, and I'm not going to cry about ARM anymore, I swear, people. But we need to have that tech ecosystem. We tend to be the garden where we put the seeds down and we grow them, and as soon as a little bud comes out, it's gone, it's grabbed, it's sold, it's subsumed by a larger entity. We need to just grow and nurture some of our companies. But obviously, we need to manage the governance as well, because as you've said, you know, allegedly, it's a huge fraud gone on there, and it tarnishes the whole of the ecosystem. And whilst that happens, there are other entities plucking and buying up our good companies before our very eyes. And the only thing that's going to stop it is the government now saying, oh, we need to make sure that we safeguard this company because it's got British this and British that. And the deepest pockets are going to carry on buying, are they not, Alex?
They are. They are, absolutely. I think you pin some hope in Kelly. You pin some hope in maybe not the size of that contract, but the fact that it's with Accenture. You pin the fact that the chairman Lever seems to have something about him. So, yeah, I mean, let's see. In a way, we're better off reviewing this situation in 2 weeks' time, because we'll know then if the raise has been successful. If the raise is unsuccessful, yeah, then I'm afraid the company isn't coming back. So, you know, yeah, there are a few hurdles to cross. But I think it's a really interesting story for us, and also for the AIM market in general, because I think AIM needs some good news. It really does. And I think getting One Disco back up and running, probably under a new name, would be a help.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm going to be bold enough to say that if they do get the raise and they do sort themselves out with the management team that's in there now, I'd probably back them myself with my own cash. Because Stephen Kelly's not one that messes about. If he's got it between his teeth, he will make sure that this cleansing of the palate of One Disco and the new name, new team, whatever share price it goes back down to, he'll be like, right, okay, we're starting from day one again now. That's what he'll be saying.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wish him and the team immense luck with it.
That was my little company to keep a tab on anyway.
Absolutely, definitely. Yeah, British tech. So absolutely agree. Any thoughts, Henry?
I totally agree with all of it. You know, it's a company that I don't know a terrific amount about, but I follow Stephen on Twitter. I think he's got a very good reputation, and I'm very excited to see what he does. And like you say, I really, really wish we would keep more British companies British. Because if we keep selling them off, we're going to keep scratching our heads and wondering about why the economy is not going anywhere.
Absolutely. For those of you that don't know much about Stephen Kelly, I've interviewed him X amount of months ago, and you can find it on the Investing Matters channel. Or just go onto YouTube and go into Investing Matters and go through the interviews on there. And you'll find, I think we were meant to do a 40-minute interview, and Stephen had so much to say, we spoke for about 90 minutes. Because he's got a fast history regarding tech. And he just shares everything regarding his passion for the UK tech and global tech. And the fact, you know, prior to this particular situation with One Disco, he'd taken the lead or second lead regarding Tech Nation, which then the government, you know, plunged into disarray, and it's now gone because they've given the contracts for nurturing our UK tech system and entrepreneurs to, I think it went to Barclays in the end. I was like, what? Yeah. You know, but that's the nature of the government saying one thing and then doing something completely different in the other hand. So it is what it is. So hence the reason he's now hopefully going to safeguard One Disco. Right. I've forgot and also ran out of time, last podcast. And Henry, without his little tie, told me off. Said, Peter, I think you've forgotten something. And I had, and I'd run out of time. So I'm making sure, ladies and gents, that I speak about the Twin Peaks Investing Challenge winner for May. We're going to be in July by the time you guys are listening to this podcast, ladies and gents. So I'm conscious that I need to just talk about this very, very briefly, so we don't have a little break here, and announce the winner for May. Henry's crunched the numbers diligently, and the winner is... Or should we do it in reverse order? We'll do it in reverse order, keep you guys and ladies just waiting. So in third place, we've got Twitter account by the name of Pigeon Profits, and came in third with a monthly return for May of 13.2. And in second place, we got an account at Morrison underscore 22 with 15.28%. Very, very credible second and third returns there for those two places. But the winner for May was a chap by the name, and I've checked the account, so it is a male, Sam McCarthy at Real underscore MCC. And Sam's portfolio returned a monthly return of 17.36 for May. It was pretty incredible. If everyone goes back and think about what happened in May, everyone's going, oh, May was a horrible month for me. It was torrid. But Sam had some very, very small, talk about AIM stocks here. People call them possibly penny dreadfuls back in the day. And Sam's portfolio is made up of Cornerstone FS PLC, which is ticker symbol CSFS, Mast Energy Developments PLC, ticker symbol MAST, Active Energy Group, ticker symbol AEG, Venture Life Group, VLG, and Technology Minerals, ticker symbol TM1, and that returned 17.36. So huge congratulations to Sam. Sam, what I need you to do is contact myself on Twitter and tell me which book you would like to have from the brilliant sponsors of Harriman House, who gave us all the books that we could wish for regarding the sponsors. There's 15 books in total that you can choose from. And what I'm going to do is I'm quickly going to read some of this list. You've got Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. That's one book. That's obviously a huge global bestseller. ESG Handbook, the ESG Investing Handbook by Becky O'Connor. You've got Just Keep Buying by Nick Maguli. I always pronounce it that way, and I know it's wrong. You're going to tell me how it's pronounced at some point, Alex. And Dear Shareholder, that's edited by Lawrence Cunningham. Professor Lawrence Cunningham, should I say. You've got the Book of Investing Rules, edited by Chris Parker. You've got the Investment Handbook, edited by several people, by Harriman House. You've got the Equity Hedge by Mark Jevons. You've got Terry Smith's book, which I think you can see here. Anyone see that one? Yeah.
Investing for Growth.
That is brilliant.
Investing for Growth. That is brilliant. Absolute Bible, isn't it? Yeah. Indeed. Then you've got Invest Your Way to Financial Freedom, which we'd all love to do, by Robin J. Powell and Ben Carlson. I nearly forgot Ben's name then. Another best-selling book. And they've got The Intelligent Fund Investor by Joe Wiggins. Tobias Williams' Retreat of Globalization, which is here. Yeah. You've got Smart Money Method by Steve Clapham. How to Pick Quality Shares by Phil Oakley. Skeptical Investor by John Stepek. So I've covered a few there. Let me just catch up with the ones I've missed. Invest in the Best by Keith Ashworth-Lord. And what else have we got? I think I've covered the 15. Have I covered the 15, more or less, there? If I missed any out.
Counting, but that's about right.
I might have missed one. I do apologise. But yeah, there's 15 books to choose from. I'll put the list out again and attach your name to the list as well, so you can choose from those books. But you've also got 1 month's subscription to ShareScope. So all I need to do is send me your email address, and I'll forward that to ShareScope as well. And obviously, we've got the leaderboard. We'll do this next month as well, but I'll give the leaderboard as of when Henry last did it. And the overall lead at the moment, that's win the star prize of all 15 books, the year subscription to ShareScope, and a bounty from our lovely people at Powder Monkey Brewery, where you can get I don't know, it's almost like having a vat of beer, isn't it? You can get, it's enough to swim in. You know, you get a day there,
I'm
day
fighting
out,
hard.
The whole nine yards. But a day at the brewery, mate, down in Gosport. So the leader at the moment is at Andy Brown underscore UK, followed by Tigers Revival and at DB from GB. They're all up there in the top three. Henry kindly put me down as being in 12th position. I think that's all to do with NVIDIA, probably. And Wheelie at the time was in 24th position. And Henry was in 33rd. So it doesn't, it's not about the suit and tie, mate. You know what I mean? But I'm not even halfway yet, mate. So there's plenty of time for everybody to catch up with those individuals and all the rest of it. And you and I can't win anyway. And Alex didn't join us in enough time to be participating. But maybe next year we can get that on. Okay, so well done to Sam. And I will look forward to hearing from you. So just send me a message and I'll sort some things out. And we'll get everything sorted out for you to get your 1 month subscription to ShareScope and your book of choice. Okay, I'll leave it to one of you guys to go to where you want to go to next. Thank you for that. Who wants to go?
Right, well, I'll jump in.
Shall we have some share chat? Choose what you want to go with, mate.
So I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball in with a US-listed stock. Okay. I was really intrigued. I had quite a lot of comments on Twitter and in my DMs about Frontier Developments, which we spoke about a few weeks ago, which is a little developer, distributor, and publisher of video games here in the UK. Not one for me, you know. I don't know a terrific amount about it, but I've kind of looked at it and disregarded it and moved on. But it did get me thinking about other names in the market that are potential alternatives to the company, as Frontier Developments had a bit of a torrid time recently. And I came across a company called Gravity Co., which is listed in the US, and the ticker is GRVY. Now, that's a £400 million market cap, again, developer, distributor, and publisher of video games in Japan and Taiwan. So very different.
Ooh, Japan.
It's on a much cheaper PE than Frontier Development. I think Frontier is on a sort of 44 PE. Gravity is on a 6.4 forward-looking PE.
Really?
Oh, yes. Wow. And this was why it piqued my interest, because I hear a lot of chat about Frontier Development. People like it. People have got opinions on it. I think there's another one, Team 14, is it? Team 17?
Team 17.
And people love them, but they're UK listed. And there are lots of games developers all around the world. And so with a little bit of research, I dug this one out. It's got EPS growth of about 75%.
I'm just going on my phone to buy now, Henry.
Exactly. You know, again, it's not one for me because of the sector. But if you like your game developers, you might want to go and have a look and see what it's all about. It's out there, and I'm not hearing anyone talking about it. So
always choose the ones no one's talking about. Give me one bear point then. What's the bear point? There must be in your SWOT analysis something that you went, is there nothing there that you can
say? My bear point is as the bear point for all developers and distributors. One, this is a really cyclical industry. So when you're struggling to pay the gas bill, the food bill, the electric bill, your rent, your mortgage, etc., you're not going to be spending money on video games. So their customer base could disappear tomorrow. And secondly, there is consumer taste. So just because consumers currently love these video games that Gravity are producing and have done for the last 5 years, doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're not going to swap to, I don't know, Call of Duty, let's say, and again, the customer base disappears. So when you're buying these companies, you are making a very targeted bet on their portfolio of games continuing to be in demand. And just because historically they've done well doesn't mean that in future they will continue to do so. So, you know, caveat emptor, buyer beware.
Great call. Great points. Well made. Good. Nice one, Henry. Nice one.
On a related note, it's fascinating to me how 2 to 3 years ago, I was involved in these companies. The market was head over heels for the likes of Team 17, Devolver Digital, Frontier Development, and so on. There's about half a dozen UK quoted games developers. And it's fair to say most of them are trading 60, 70% below where they were. There were two or three IPOs in 2020, 2021. And the way that they've fallen out of bed, I think, must create some opportunities for those that are able to sort of think strategically or look perhaps 12, 18 months out. Because the super cycle of gaming, I don't think personally, has really changed. We know that there's a lot going on at the moment with Microsoft and Activision, but I still think on a sort of five-year view, there's a lot of growth in this industry. These companies that floated in the UK may have blotted their copybooks somewhat, but at the end of the day, they're relatively small companies and they will be taken over if share price underperformance persists, which it is at the moment. So you know, interesting comments. For me, in terms of stocks, I'll just pick up on that. I mean, a name I would throw into the ring is a mid-cap called Future, FTURE, Future. It's trading about £6.30 at the moment. It's got one of the worst charts you could ever see. Must have halved year to date easily. And frankly, it looks to me as though the forecasts in the market are far too high. So you're probably thinking, well, why do you want to buy something which is falling and where the forecasts are too high? And the reason is that basically Future is a conglomerate which was put together by acquisitions between about 2016 and 2020 in the UK and the US. It's got assets in publishing. It's got assets in price comparison. They own the Go Compare website, for example. And it's got assets in affiliate marketing. The cost of its acquisitions are now way ahead of the current market cap. So I've got a feeling some sort of breakup must be a possibility here with Future, because frankly, it's trading way below, you know, sort of gross acquisition cost. And I also think it's one of those names where the market knows that downgrades are coming. So it's really up to the company to get those downgrades out there so we can all move on. You know, it won't be for everybody, but I think it's one of those ones where it's fallen so far that I think it's worth a look. So that's Future. Current share price mid 600s, and I think it's probably entering oversold territory. But I must reiterate, I think you buy it or you look at it in the knowledge that there is a downgrade coming to earnings. But paradoxically, this could be one of those ones where actually the downgrade is a catalyst, because then the market knows what it's dealing with. What you find in this sort of market environment, guys, in my experience, is that the market is way ahead of a lot of investors. The market has moved to downgrade earnings months in advance. You can see that in some of the big share price moves down. And so when the downgrade actually comes through, the market can move on. It can have a sigh of relief. It can say, okay, we thought you're on a PE of 4, actually you're on a PE of 8, but at least we know where you stand now. And I think some of these deep cyclicals with consumer exposure, either in the UK or the US, have been battered, absolutely battered, but there is value there. And Future's a name I would sort of throw in the mix.
Yeah, it's a really interesting name. It's a company I used to hold, and I did really, really well out of it. And it's one of those companies whereby it almost, once again, did too many acquisitions. And the last big one that they did seemed to have been the catalyst for it to roll over. And like you say, the CEO has now left, and they're trying to sort themselves out a little bit. I think you're right in that sense, could be oversold at the moment. I think given the majority of their income is via all different sort of ad tech and advertising, that until that's deemed to have plateaued, Henry and I hold a couple of stocks that are exposed to the advertising side of it, and they're all sitting there nearer or at 52-week lows, if not multi-year lows in certain instances. And I think it's until that aspect changes and we see ad revenue going up, ITV is another one, everyone's been talking about that for years, being taken over. It's got too much debt. It needs too much money to invest in all the different projects it wants to invest in. I think there might be a possibility that Future decides that some of the acquisitions that they've made, they can consolidate some of those, but others that can say, actually, that part of that acquisition that we did a few years ago, we don't actually want it anymore. It's non-core. And they can start selling off some of the bits they don't actually want. That's got smaller margins. And that might help, you know, help them as a catalyst to take off. And everyone's talking about AI anyway. So they can boost their ad tech revenues by incorporating more and more AI into what they're doing, and maybe offload some of the different companies that they've got. The numbers of people that came with those companies, reduce that headcount a little bit by embracing AI even more. So it could be a really good catalyst going forward.
And I would flag to you, Peter, but to anybody listening, that CEO you mentioned, Zilla, who left about three months.
Yeah, yeah.
She's been replaced, or the new chap's called Steinberg. He's an American. He spent about $800,000 on future shares about 6 weeks ago, when the share price was about $800. And you know, he's lost about $150,000 in 6 weeks. So he is personally incentivized to exactly what you're saying,
going the other way,
get it going. And also, is there anything we don't need to own? Is there anything that we're over invested in? Is that, you know, because you often find this with companies, don't you guys, that you have a CEO and that CEO has a real following and has a real, you know, there's a clear strategy behind what he or she do. That person leaves, investors are a bit fed up or spooked. The new guy comes in, he may have a different way of doing things, a different approach to value creation. And I think Future's in that situation now where you had a much loved CEO, she's gone, that's pissed people off. The new fella's now got to put his mark down. But what encourages me is that he's put his own money on the table. You know, $800,000's, you know, not too shabby in terms of director buying. So another reason why I think, you know, Future might be worth a look.
I absolutely agree. And that's you don't see that very often, you know, especially in this climate. You're seeing, they've sold £800,000 worth of shares and then they're buying back 50,000, you know, yes. And going, I see what's happened there, you know, and everyone's exclaiming he's bought 50K, but everyone's forgotten about a year ago, they sold 800,000. But to go in firsthand and go, wallop, I believe in this company going forward, that's a big, 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 you know, skin in the game to actually start with. So, you know, admire that. Absolutely admire that.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShearPad today using the TWINPEETS promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
So, right, where are we going now? I'm going to quickly mention the fact that we had some fantastic feedback for Twin Peaks 103. The numbers for the new format of the three, the pyramid three here, has actually accelerated the number of listeners we've had. So this will be our third one. At present, I've done the numbers, and the numbers of listeners have gone up by 26%. So I want to thank everybody from wherever you are in the world that's been listening to the podcast. Thank you all to our new listeners, because I'm not sure where you've come from, but I really appreciate it, because we were stuck at 2,500 averaging, and we're now pushing over 3,000 regarding the past three we've had. This is going to be the third one with just three of us. So please, please, please keep listening and please keep sharing it. If you can subscribe to the YouTube channel, absolutely, please, please do so. And in that regard, keep the feedback coming to us. One feedback we got from Australia, and it's a chap by the name of Demetrius_193. And basically his words were backing up what I said regarding the podcast at the beginning of the last one. And he was basically saying, first 5 minutes of his podcast is amazing. And my respects to Peter at Conker's 3 for his standing up in support of his for his colleague who had been targeted by trolls. The standard one decides to be a bystander on is the standard one will ultimately accept. I must say this, and irrespective of Henry being on the podcast, had Henry not been on the podcast, and I just knew of Henry on the on Twitter, I would have done exactly the same thing and come on Twitter on the podcast and challenged what was being done. And I will keep doing that going forward regarding individuals that are trolling other people and bullying. Because I just think it's abhorrent. Yeah. And one of the reasons why I find it abhorrent, and I wasn't going to share this with the people, I was only shared this with a couple of people, is because I've lost one friend who got bullied and committed suicide. And I'm not going to have it. Yeah, I'm not going to have another person I know. I'm not saying Henry's going to do that. And Henry's not going to do that. I don't want anyone to be forced where they think, oh, can't deal with this world anymore. Yeah. So just think about what you're doing before you come on Twitter and just maintain some respect for other people, the same level of respect you'd like for yourself. Right. Quickly, Memphis Charity, justgiving.com, fundraising / Twin Peaks Challenge 2-3. We're at 1968. We've stuck on that. I think most people just listening but not giving. So if you can make another donation, that'd be very, very kind of you. So if you can, that'd be lovely. We're moving on and we're trying to get to 2000. It'd be absolutely lovely if we can do that. And I've got some ideas as to what we're going to do going forward. Now I need to talk about Robbie Burns. We've got an opportunity for individuals such as yourself. So I'm always trying to find things for you, ladies and gents, to have to continue your learning. But this has got nothing to do with me. This is from via Wheelie Dealer. So a big shout out for Pete at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. He knows of, and Robbie contacted Wheelie directly regarding this. And he has basically given us, the Twin Peaks podcast, 3 copies of his book. This is an intermediate book now. Everyone knows about Trading Like a Shark. This is an intermediate trading book. And this one is called The Naked Trader's Book of Trading Strategies. Yeah. So if you want to win 1 of 3 copies of that book, all you need to do is go onto the YouTube page of Conker's 3 and say, Peter, I'm already subscribed. I would like to be entered for The Naked Trader book. Right. So if you're not subscribed, subscribe onto the YouTube channel. Yeah. And say, I would like to be entered for the book. Collect all the names, and then we'll put the draw out. So we give it 1 week or 2 weeks. What do you think, guys?
Two weeks.
Yeah. So 2 weeks this Wednesday, I will make a draw regarding it all. So if you're already subscribed to the YouTube channel, great. Just leave a message underneath this podcast and say, please enter me. I'm already subscribed. If you're not, then subscribe and say, please enter me into the competition. Put all the names into a little hat. And we'll make the draw, do the draw on the show maybe in 2 weeks' time. Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much to Pete and to Robbie. That's a very generous
Robbie Burns
contribution.
Absolutely. Ice and Millionaire from Trading, series of books, rather than Naked Trader books. And you can find his podcast as well. Fantastic podcast he does. Right. Have we got time? Yeah, I'm going to sneak these in very, very quickly. Got 2 stocks for you, ladies and gents, to have a little look over. One I know Alex will know, so you'll contribute to this one as well, and I'm sure Henry knows of it as well, so he can contribute. And one of the stocks I've got a soft spot for cybersecurity. I've got a soft spot for IT resellers, and this one is the IT reseller Softcat. Yeah, or he's nodding his head already. Alex is nodding his head for those who are not watching on YouTube, he's giving it a thumbs up. Alex didn't know I was going to talk about this. So Softcat, ticker symbol SCT, close today at £13.97, market cap of £2.73 billion. Shares are up just shy of 18% year to date, so that's outperforming quite a lot of other tech stocks that we've got in the UK. The P is a bit rich at 25, yields tiny at 1.8. The range is £10.59 to £14.84, so at £13.97, it's at the top of its range. But essentially, it's one of the UK leading IT infrastructure technology services provider. Yeah. So selling IT into the infrastructure side of it. And they add a May trading update, and they're basically saying, we're doing all right. It's not knocking the doors off, but I think people were expecting the quite poor results. And the full year results, which I think will be announced September, October time, are in line with expectations, whereas a lot of people in the IT space in the UK are coming out with and getting slashed with profit warnings and so on and so forth. So yeah, a couple of shrewd fund managers are in the stock as well, and they've got exposure to the US, so that's always good for a diversification of revenue. So that's one of the companies. I don't own it, and as always, I'm just giving it as an idea for you ladies and gents to go away and research. Quickly go to Alex. Anything to add to that, Alex? You're nodding. That's a
very good summary, Peter. No, I like SoftCap, and I think that's a good shout.
Okie dokie. Quickly going to move on now to another one. Help me out with the pronunciation, guys. I'm Jamaican, so I don't get these things right. Convatec. Is that right?
Convatec.
CTEC, wound care, biomedical products and technology company. Engaged in the manufacture and sale of medical products, services, technologies, etc., 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 etc. Critical real wound care, ostomy care, continence, critical care, infusion care, etc., etc., etc. And it's one of them that's been unloved, I think, and it's been hammered. It's down 10% year to date, only 6 months in. Current price, 208. Price range, 195 up to 267. So at 208, it's at the bottom of the range. And it's just one of them. It's one of them companies. I just think if they can get themselves sorted and increase the revenue guidance going forward, I think they could surprise, because we're in a situation where we've got more and more people living longer, longevity issues and so on and so forth, better care. We're having this backlog of wait on the waiting list of people needing hospital care. So they're in a sweet spot. I think at some point or other, they'll be in a sweet spot. So that's why I'm choosing. I like stocks when they're nearer to the bottom of their 52-week range to buy, not after I bought them. I don't like them down there after I bought them. And neither does Henry. Well, but it's one of the stocks that I think at some point or other, it could do okay. Sorry, Henry, you were going to say?
Yeah, saying it's at the bottom of the range, to come back to our topic of debt from earlier, I think yes, that might well be the reason it is at the bottom of the range, because they have got, according to the figures I'm looking at anyway, net debt of $1.1 billion, which is fairly substantial. Now, I don't know what the maturity is on it. I don't know what the yield is on it. I don't know anything more than that. But for a company with a profit, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars a year, that could be a problem going forward. So, you know, when you're doing your research, go have a look at their debt page.
Good call. Good call. You see, that's the beauty of having three people on the radars to give that sort of view. So good call, Henry. That could be regarding it all. Definitely. Definitely. Right. What do you guys want to add that we've not covered yet? We're on the hour mark, so that's really good.
I'm delighted with what we've talked about, and I'd just like to wish everybody enjoy the rest of June. Not much more to add.
Cool. Henry, anything?
A huge thank you to everybody that's reached out on Twitter. I've had a couple of people comment on my blog, The Ethical Entrepreneur. I've had people email me. I even had someone text me the other day. The feedback on the podcast has been absolutely fantastic. It's a real privilege to be on it. And I hope you're continuing to enjoy it. So thanks for tuning in.
Brilliant. Okie dokie. Thank you, Henry. And you can find Henry at HTViola on Twitter. So please follow that account. And you can find Alex at DeGroot Media on Twitter also. So please follow that account. Please don't follow my account. Guys, ladies and gents, thank you ever so much for listening to Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 104. Please subscribe to the platforms that you're already listening on. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe on YouTube. And enter the Robbie Burns competition and get yourself a copy of his fantastic book, which is going to be potentially another bestseller. So, yeah, thank you all once again. Take care. Look out for each other. Be kind, people. Yeah. Look out for each other. Do what you can in your communities, and look out for your neighbors. Look out for your friends. And most of all, take care of yourselves. You know, we've got difficult times. We've not mentioned mortgages. I think we've probably put that in the box. They don't mention mortgages. But there's lots of stuff going on regarding mortgages. And I think going forward, we might start talking a bit more about personal finance, so we can give people some sort of nuggets as well regarding how to deal with it. I'd mentioned it back in October about, guys, ladies and gents, look out for mortgages. And then I mentioned it again on Twitter this week, because, you know, it's a big weight to deal with. And even if you're renting, the rents are going up. But we'll talk about that another time. Until July, which is going to be in next week when we come back. Take care of yourselves. Enjoy the sunshine. And stay blessed. Take care.
Thanks, Peter.
God bless you all.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.